Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Floss Weekly is provided by CashFly at CACHEFLY.com.
This is Floss Weekly with Randall Schwartz and Aaron Newcomb. Episode 138 for October 6th, 2010. Cappuccino. It's time for Floss Weekly, the show of free, libre, open-source software brought to you weekly. I am your host, Randall Schwartz, Merlin at Stonehenge.com. We have a great show lined up today, but before I introduce too much more about the show, let me first introduce my co-host. Hello, Aaron Newcomb.
Hey, Randall. Good to be back.
Yeah, good to have you back. Good to have you back. And you're not Aaron Sago, as I announced a couple days ago on the Twitter feed and everything. Slight complication with scheduling, and at the last minute you were able to jump in here and fill in for the show, so I really appreciate that.
Yeah, no problem. And I'm pretty close to the studio, so I just drove over here and don't have to worry about Comcast shutting off my connection in the middle of the show, so that's good.
And that actually is right. For those of you that are watching the video, the video feed is opposed to the audio feed. In fact, Aaron is in the studio, which makes it a little bit easier for him to have the really cool mics to talk into.
Yeah. I get all the neat, cool equipment around here. It's great.
Very cool. Well, speaking of very cool, let me give a brief introduction to our current guest. Our current guest will be on in a moment. Let me find my notes here, Ross Boucher. He works with 280slides.com. He is a co-founder of the Cappuccino Web Framework and its associated Objective-J language. Lots of technology, lots of terminology here. Let me give you a quick view of what it's about. Cappuccino is a web framework designed to make rich web applications that mimic actually desktop applications. And the way they've done that is they've taken all the normal interfaces you get in Objective-C when you're using Cocoa on OS X and on the iPhone operating system. And they brought those all over to the client side. They brought those all over so you can essentially make like a button like you would make in a normal display, and you would make like a web layout, but like a scroll view and things like that, just like you would make for a desktop app. And they've enhanced JavaScript to include Objective-C-like interfaces to it, so it makes it really interesting. So really nice, rich web frameworks. I'm looking forward to hearing about this. I may even have a chance to use it for one of my upcoming clients. So you have any questions, Aaron, before we jump into the show?
No. I just hope this doesn't go too far over my head. I mean, I'm a novice programmer, so hopefully you guys don't delve too deep. But I'm anxious to hear about it.
Okay, here we go. Well, without further ado, let's go ahead and bring on our guest. Hello, Ross.
Hi.
Hey, where are we speaking to you from?
From my apartment in San Francisco.
San Francisco, pretty close by. It's cool. Well, close by, not to me, but to everybody else at the Twit Cottage. So I gave kind of a 30-second overview of what Cappuccino and Objective-J was at the beginning of the show, but I'm sure you can do a much better job than I can. So why don't you give us sort of like the first high-level view of this?
Sure. So Cappuccino is a web application framework. In other words, it's a framework that helps developers build applications that run in a browser, we like to say. And we classify these as desktop class applications. And so what we mean by that is things that you might find on the desktop and would feel very comfortable on the desktop. And sort of the prime example that we give is our own application, 280 Slides, which if you go to 280slides.com, you can check it out. It's a presentation app. And it feels, you know, very familiar to anyone who's used something like PowerPoint or Keynote. The idea is to be able to build these apps which are very richly interactive and, you know, highly performant as well.
So that's the first thing that impressed me. That was the first thing that impressed me as I started staring at this, is just the level to which you're able to whip JavaScript into shape to actually make what we would normally go down to, say, Objective-C on OS X or the iPhone operating system and things like that. You've actually been able to bring all of this. Are you bringing it all over client-side then, or is there still some server-side stuff that's supporting this?
So Cappuccino is completely client-side, and it's interesting that you mentioned Cocoa. One of the things I didn't mention but probably should is that Cappuccino is modeled after Cocoa and a little less so after Cocoa Touch. So it's basically the same set of APIs. We actually invented a language, Objective-J, which is essentially a port of the ideas behind Objective-C to JavaScript. In other words, we add the same things which Objective-C added to C to JavaScript. We call it Objective-J.
So in traditional rich applications, as we're getting fancier and fancier over on the client side, it's been mostly done by having still a lot of server-side support, the client having more and more cool things, maybe like with jQuery or with some of the other AJAX toolkits like Mookit and things like that, or even going all the way to the extreme of, say, GWT. Is this similar to GWT by any chance?
In a way, it's similar. GWT does a similar thing where they've taken Java and they turn Java into what becomes your final application through a build process. We are using Objective-J, and the process is a little bit different because we can translate in the browser. You don't need to compile ahead of time. It all happens on the fly. But it doesn't actually have to be that way. We can compile it ahead as well, and in that case, it looks a little bit more like GWT. GWT, though, does include a server component, and Cappuccino does not. So we, just like any other website, communicate with any backend that you'd like using technologies like XML HTTP request.
So typically you would have you're running pretty much all your application client side then. And it sounds like you're also translating from Objective-J to, like, you must translate it to JavaScript, then eval it or something like that, right? Is that all happening browser side?
It does happen both browser side and optionally ahead of time as well. So essentially what happens is there's a simple translation process which takes the few syntax additions we've made to JavaScript and turns them into actual vanilla JavaScript that the browser can understand itself. And that translator is written in JavaScript. So the translator can run in the browser, which is what happens when you download Cappuccino and just start programming, or we can run it on the command line in a terminal, which is what we do when we ship code. So in other words, when you actually download Cappuccino, we've gone and compiled it ahead of time through this pre-compilation process. So the thing that you download is compiled already, but all the new code you write is not compiled until you choose to download our compiler and do it ahead of time.
So let's talk a little bit about Objective-J. So one of the things I know about my transition from, say, traditional O languages to when I started looking at JavaScript is that there didn't seem to be immediately graspable the sort of notation of standard classes and a class hierarchy and instance variables, things like that, that seemed to be all kind of foreign to me. And I noticed one of the things you've done with Objective-J is you've changed that and brought it back to such a more traditional class and instance variable notation.
Right. JavaScript uses what's called prototypical inheritance, which is it's not completely foreign to people who are doing like traditional classical inheritance, but it can be pretty confusing. Objective-J, one of the goals of the language was to have classical inheritance. Not necessarily because it's a better thing, but because we were more familiar with it, and we think that most developers are more familiar with it. And so we decided that that was going to be probably a powerful tool for most developers. And also, since we were modeling it after Cocoa, obviously Objective-C and Cocoa are strongly based around classical inheritance.
So just to make sure I've got my hands around what you've totally done here. So you've created this language, Objective-J. You've created translators for it in JavaScript, or actually probably written Objective-J too, but translated in Bootstrap somehow. You've taken that, you put that all browser side. You've also then taken the interfaces that we would normally consider native to OS X, the Cocoa interfaces, and you've re-implemented all of those again in Objective-J or in JavaScript, and those are all running on the browser side.
Yes. I wouldn't say that we've implemented everything. If I had to guess, maybe we have about 2/3 of the components which are in Cocoa. And it's also worth noting that, a desktop Mac application includes a lot more than just Cocoa. Cocoa is very specifically AppKit and Foundation, which are the two things that we've focused on. So we don't have things like core image and core video and things like that.
Okay. So that's just, and how did this come about? You mentioned 280 slides, and this is related to that too, right?
This project started in about 2005, I guess. Myself and the two co-founders of my company, Francisco Tolmaski and Tom Robinson, all went to school together at the University of Southern California. And when we were there, we were interested in building In fact, it got started as a tool to build dashboard widgets, if anyone remembers dashboard. Mm-hmm. And our great idea was, oh, since dashboard widgets are web technologies, we should build our tool in web technologies. And so we spent a lot of time learning about sort of what the state of the art in building sort of complex applications in web technologies was. And back in 2005, it was still not very far along. Eventually, we decided to abandon that particular project in no small part because Dash Code came out. But we thought that the things that we had built were useful. So we kept working on them. And then eventually we hit a wall where we were constantly reinventing some of the patterns that we were really used to having in desktop environments like Cocoa. Classical inheritance was one of them. And there are a number of others like file importing that worked reliably. Dependency management and things like that. And so we took a step back and really thought about the ways we could solve that problem. And one of the reasons we chose to tackle it the way we did by emulating an existing framework was because we felt designing an API is very difficult. It's a very challenging task. It can take years to get right. And Cocoa is one that both we're familiar with and has been around for now about 20 years, I guess. And has proven itself to be pretty capable and pretty flexible. So we decided rather than trying to tackle both the implementation side and design side, we would just stick with something we knew and that we felt worked pretty well and see how far that got us. And I think it worked pretty well.
So let me up-level this a little bit because you know you guys are the hardcore programmers, right? And I'm just a novice, just a newbie when it comes to programming. So I want to understand a little bit because you know, what I've heard so far is that you've been talking about client-side pieces, but then there's also some browser pieces. And I'm just wondering, I mean, is this something that's going to allow people to still develop applications that can be portable and live in the cloud? Or is there always going to have to be, you know, a piece that you download? I'm thinking like, for example, I mean, you mentioned the presentation software that was created, right? So mm-hmm. If I download that and I'm using it on my laptop at home and then I leave my laptop behind and I go to a conference where they have somebody else's laptop or whatever, I mean, can I gain access to that application from there or am I going to be out of luck because I didn't bring my laptop with me and I'm missing that client side piece?
Sure. So I guess maybe I wasn't entirely clear. The apps run completely in the browser. So when you go to twoslides.com, the whole app is living in the browser, in the cloud, in other words. And when you save your data, we're saving it to the cloud. So wherever you go, you can access that data.
Ah, great. So it is an entirely online. You're delivering online applications for end users. Okay, great. So I got that out of the way. The next question I had is, you know, you mentioned a little bit about, you know, how this got started, but I'm just trying to think if I was going to use this, what are my limitations? What could I use it for and what should I not use this for? What's it not designed for?
Sure. That's a really good question. When we set out to do this, we were very specifically interested in the problem of applications that running in a browser, which is very different from a traditional website. If you look at a website like the newyorktimes.com, or Craigslist, for example, those are both very simple, content services. You're looking at a piece of information and that information is hyperlinked to other pieces of information. On the other end of the spectrum is where you have things like applications. And 2D Slides, I think, is a good example. A site like Amoebo or Google Docs or Google Maps even is more of an application than it is a website. So we think there's a pretty broad spectrum between very static content and highly dynamic applications. And Cappuccino is only useful for that application side of the spectrum. If you tried to use it to make a static site, you'd be shooting yourself in the foot.
Right. So now I'm thinking about how you would. I'm trying to compare this with other projects. So we talked a little bit about Cocoa already. What about something like jQuery? I mean, is this comparable to
no, I'd say it's very different from jQuery. And so this goes back to this spectrum. Every time we give a presentation, we have a slide with this spectrum, and I wish I could show it to you. But we see jQuery as sort of serving the middle ground between our complete one-end side of the spectrum and the completely static, say, New York Times example that I gave. And jQuery is essentially, if you've got an existing website, it's a really good tool for making that website more dynamically. For example, taking a piece of content, rather than reloading the whole page to get a new piece of content, injecting new content dynamically. But it's still, I think, very focused around, by design, creating a web page using traditional technologies like HTML, and then making that web page slightly more dynamic, giving it slightly more interesting behavior, like an animation or lists which update automatically rather than having to reload the page, things like that.
Okay. And you mentioned one example of Cappuccino. Do you have others? Like, what else are people doing with Cappuccino? Something that I might be familiar with? That I might have
Sure. One of my favorites is an application called Go Mockingbird at gomockingbird.com, and it's a wireframing tool. There's also a lot of other... Observer app is one that I don't think has launched publicly yet, but has been getting a lot of attention from people in the community. It's an analytics tracker, which is it's really beautiful. It was designed and developed by one guy in Sweden, I want to say, all by himself. And he's not even a developer. He essentially has taught himself programming over the last year or so, which is really impressive. And there are also a lot of internal projects using it at various companies. Pixar is using it. A whole bunch of other companies, which I can't mention right now because they haven't launched it yet. But
I'm just looking at this this Go Mockingbird. I mean, those are pretty two very different examples that you just mentioned, right? I mean, analytics and a wireframing.
Yeah, tool. Yeah. Absolutely.
I mean, those are like opposite ends of the spectrum.
Sure.
So that really hits a wide wide range of applications.
Yeah, and I think a lot of it is the presentation. I think you could decide to do a lot of things in very different ways. And I think the new Twitter site is a good example of this. I don't know if you've seen it. But Twitter is, I think, something I would have used as a canonical example of this is relatively static content, which links to other static content. But the new Twitter site has really, I think, changed that. And they've made a site that's really designed to be highly interactive. And it's still based around content, but I think the approach to it speaks to, I think, maybe where a lot of websites are going to be heading in the future.
Cool. Well, that sounds really cool. Actually, can I step through an actual practical example and maybe that'll help me understand all the pieces that are involved here? One of the many clients that I have is I'm working for Neil Bauman of Insight Cruises. We do trainings on board ship, and I get to go on six cruises a year. I like this. But part of my job is I actually have to build his website. One of the things we've been looking at is the booking engine, redoing the booking engine from, the early 2000s Pearl into something a little bit more fancy. And He wants to have a lot of interactivity. So could I build, say, something that allows me to, say, select a cruise and then put people on it and then pull out all the details for each person and that sounds pretty reasonable, actually. But now, how would that data then get back over to the server side? Would I have to make like API calls to get back to my database on the server side?
Yeah, that's exactly the case. So basically, when you build this kind of application and your information is living, or excuse me, your work is being done on the client, like it is with Cappuccino, then you have to think about how the data works. And it's exactly the same way as, let's say, you're building a desktop application and you wanted the data to be stored on a server. You'd have to invent an API on your server, and you'd communicate between your clients and your server. And it's actually, I think, more true to the client-server model than traditional web pages are, in that it requires you to make a pretty clean separation between the code, which is handling data and how you deal with data and how you modify or create new data, and the code, which is presenting it, which... in the case of Cappuccino, is living purely on the client.
So in this case, for example, I would have some call made as the application is loading up that says, what's the current list of future cruises?
Right.
And that would give me back some data. Do I use JSON for that? Do I use like a normal AJAX call?
Yeah, exactly like that. You could just use the XML HTTP request directly. We've got facilities in Cappuccino to make it a little bit easier, or at least a little bit more natural feeling in the Objective-J way.
Cool. That sounds cool. Let me actually give this a whack then. I'm actually meeting with Neil this weekend. Maybe we can propose it and show some of your existing demos. So let me again make sure that I understand. So we've got this, we've got Objective-J, but you said part of it's JavaScript. So I'm still coding a normal JavaScript around the parts that aren't Objective-J.
So Objective-J is a strict superset of JavaScript, much like Objective-C is a strict superset of C. And what that means is that any existing valid JavaScript is still valid Objective-J. So in other words, a huge percentage of the code you're writing when you're writing Objective-J is actually just JavaScript. And there are really only a few extra things, like the syntax for sending messages and the syntax for creating classes, that would look foreign to any JavaScript developer.
But unlike, say, using jQuery and other sort of traditional rich client-side interfaces, one thing I saw is that you're not actually manipulating DOM stuff. You're not actually generating HTML or generating all this. That this is actually all done by the framework then, right?
That's right. We decided early on that we wanted to abstract the DOM away completely. So you'd never worry about creating DOM nodes or modifying CSS styles. Everything you do is done programmatically through JavaScript and Objective-J. And I think this has a lot of advantages. One of them is that especially the group of people we're targeting, people who weren't necessarily making web applications in the past, but were used to sort of a different programming model, it makes it easier because you only have to learn one set of technologies rather than HTML, CSS, and JavaScript, which can be pretty distinctly different in the way that they work. The other advantage it has is that Cappuccino isn't necessarily tied to the current implementation. If you look at the amount of code that actually deals directly with the DOM, it's, I'd say, fewer than 1% of the code. And if we wanted to, tomorrow, if there becomes, say, a better display technology in the browsers, like if SVG became fast and widely available, we could switch all of Cappuccino's rendering to be SVG-based. And as long as you were using all of the standard APIs in Cappuccino, you'd get those benefits automatically.
Let's talk about that for a second. Browser compatibility. Do you require Canvas? Do you require certain kinds of JavaScript advanced support? How cross-browser are you?
Obviously, we try to work in as many browsers as possible. We don't require Canvas. We actually have an API called Core Graphics, which is modeled after, of course, the Core Graphics on Cocoa. And that sort of transparently translates between Canvas and the technology that Internet Explorer has, which is called VML. So if you use this API, you'll work both in Internet Explorer and in Chrome, Firefox, Safari, Opera, which all support Canvas, without having to worry about the fact that there's a different browser there. In general, because we rely on such a low set of browser features like absolute positioning and not a lot else, we're able to work without much effort at all in pretty much any browser. The main feature that we look for is the speed of the browser, because obviously as you're doing these complex applications, you start to get a lot of things going on. And so essentially anything that's fast enough, we think, is a good target environment for Cappuccino.
Now, I'm not too familiar with the Cocoa interface, although I'm slowly trying to learn it because I do want to start looking at making some iPhone apps and stuff. I'm sure that's actually driving a lot of people towards all of a sudden going, oh, Objective-C, that's something interesting to learn.
Absolutely.
Does it provide things like I don't know, would be sort of like an auto-scrolling traditional HTML where if there's a few items, there's no scroll bar, but if there's many items, you automatically get the scroll bar? Does it do things like that?
It does things like that in a sense. Rather than doing a lot of things automatically, it gives you the facilities for doing them the way you want. So Coco and Cappuccino have a class called CP Scroll View, and if you put a view inside of a scroll view and the view becomes larger than the scroll view, it'll scroll around. So in other words, you get to decide whether or not you put something that you want to scroll in a scroll view. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, perfect. That's great. Great. And so also, again, without writing HTML, I would say things like put a button here, color it green, here's the text on it in this font, it auto-scales with the width of the browsers, it gets wider. I would say things sort of in that abstract level, right? And then that all turns into the right HTML and CSS styles below that?
Right. And there are certain things which HTML and CSS are always going to be better at. It is more code to create a button in Cappuccino because we absolutely position that button. We use images to give it its look, partly because we want it to look good and consistent in every browser, unlike the standard HTML form elements. And you have to manually give it your text and then tell it to size to fit. So buttons are an example. There's a method which says basically calculate how wide I need to be based on the text I am and then fill up that size. But you have to do that manually. One of the reasons that we think that this is actually the right way to do it is because it allows us to create more predictable tools that interact with that framework. Because less is happening automatically, we can create visual tools or other tools to create these kind of interfaces, which is even more natural, I think, than writing HTML to design something visually. And the tool is designed really to work well with the framework because of the predictability of the framework.
Is that Atlas that you're talking about?
Atlas is our tool that we've written, and there's another one called Nib2Sib, which lets users use Apple's interface builder directly and convert those interfaces to working Cappuccino interfaces.
That sounds good. Sounds cool. Now, what's well, describe more about what Atlas is, because I saw a demo on that. I was pretty excited about it.
Sure. Atlas is our take on what a interface development environment should be for Cappuccino and, you know, for web applications in general. And it's modeled highly after Interface Builder, which comes from Apple. Essentially, the main idea behind it, there's, you know, text editing and project management, though those features are not particularly interesting. The main thing that Atlas offers is this visual layout editor, which lets you design your application visually and connect components together and connect those visual components back to your code so that you can develop, you know, your application against the interface that you've designed.
Okay. And so I would use that to get everything all set up, but I still have to put some code behind that at some point, right?
That's right. Atlas is not designed as a tool which will, like, eliminate the need to write code. It's not, for example, you know, some person who's never programmed or just some designer probably wouldn't be able to come to Atlas, make an application, and expect it to just work. Maybe someday in the future that will be possible, but I don't think it's possible right now, and it's certainly not what our goal is with Atlas. Atlas is essentially to take what we see as the sort of boring and non-unique parts of working, which are laying out the interface, you know, deciding which components are actually there, has very little to do with typing the code. And so we're trying to minimize the amount of time you have to spend with these sort of uninteresting and repetitive tasks by making them as simple as possible visually to let you spend your real work writing the, you know, unique and interesting components of your app, the code.
And would it be safe to say that Atlas is written in Cappuccino?
Yes, Atlas is written in Cappuccino.
So you're eating your own dog food on that. Now, what was it like? Did you find areas and corners of Cappuccino that needed to be enhanced because of the way you were building Atlas?
Absolutely. Both 280 Slides and Atlas were key components in the development of Cappuccino. When we started writing Cappuccino in 2006 or 2005, it was very much an academic process. We thought that this class would be interesting to write, so we wrote it. And then, you know, we took some time off, and when we decided to come back to it full time, we realized that we really needed a different strategy for building this framework. And so we came up with the idea of writing an app, 280 Slides, which really changed the way we developed for the framework. It was really the case that we started writing an application, figured out what was missing, and then wrote the component in the framework. So 280 Slides and Cappuccino really evolved side by side. And Atlas, being, I think, a pretty different application than 280 Slides, helped evolve it in new directions, which 280 Slides didn't.
Cool. Just thinking where I'm going to go here with this. So the project Cappuccino started because you wanted to build 280 Slides, and Atlas is also there. So one of the things I saw as I was looking at Atlas is that there's this thing called Native Host. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure. So if you download Atlas today through the Atlas beta program, you'll see that it's a native Mac application. And you might say, but you just told me it was a Cappuccino application. How could that be? And so what we did was we invented this technology called Native Host, which basically acts as a bridge between Cappuccino and the native desktop environment. And right now, Native Host is Mac only, but there are some people in the community working on porting it to Linux and Windows so that we'll be able to provide desktop applications for those environments too.
So I'll be able to take an app and decide whether I want to deploy it in the browser or whether I want to deploy it as a native application then.
Right. And the reason that we wanted to do this is actually pretty simple. So Atlas is a web app, but one of the main things that the people we were trying to sell this to came back and told us was that we don't really want our code living in the cloud, or we're not comfortable just yet with you hosting our code. And so we needed a way for people to interact with their local file systems. And this actually, I think, was a pretty simple and elegant way to solve that problem, which got us this extra benefit of having this feature for all Cappuccino users of being able to ship desktop apps.
Now, do you have a sense of development speed of, say, Objective-J versus Objective-C then? Because really we'd be doing that same sort of thing with Objective-C and compiling down to native toolkits then, right?
Yeah. There's obviously a main benefit, which is because you're writing it in web technologies, it's going to run on the desktop, it's going to run on the web, it's going to run Windows, Mac, Linux eventually, which you're never going to get if you're just writing a straight Cocoa app. In terms of development speed, I think it's hard to really compare the two. There are a lot of things which Cocoa offers, which we don't offer. Cocoa has a really good set of tools because they've been maturing them for the last decade. And we've, you know, really only been writing tools as a relatively small community for about a year and a half. But at the same time, there are things about Objective-J which are a lot easier for developers to use than Objective-C. You know, being based on JavaScript, we're a much more dynamic language than Objective-C is. We had blocks, for example, before Cocoa did, anonymous closures.
So,
and that's just a good example, I think.
Yeah, so I've got a question then. Just hearing you describe Cappuccino and Atlas, I mean, does this really help me get to the point where I can develop a web app and then also an iPhone or an Android app, I guess iPhone app, or possibly Android, without having to rewrite all my code? Because a lot of the applications that are out there today, if you look at Twitter, or there's tons of these examples, right? They live on the web for the most part. And then there's also, you know, a native iPhone or Android app that you download that you run on your phone. I mean, do these technologies help me bridge that gap more easily?
Well, I think this is the big open question going forward. Right now, Cappuccino isn't heavily focused on the mobile space. And I think that that's something that will evolve over the next few years, especially as the iPad and similar devices become more popular. But I think that it's definitely the case that people are going to move to writing web applications even for mobile rather than sticking with native apps. If I had to make a guess, that'd be what I'd guess. And I think that the iPad will actually help here more so than the iPhone, because the form factor is at least closer to the desktop than the iPhone was. There's no doubt that the iPhone requires a completely new interface for your thing to be, for your, you know, application to be useful. But the iPad, you can sort of get away with something that's very close to or the same as what you had. And if you look at new Twitter, it's very similar to the iPad Twitter app. And Facebook is another good example here in that you'll notice there's no Facebook app for the iPad because they don't see it as a necessary thing, because Facebook as a website works pretty well already on the iPad.
Yeah, and I think we've seen, as far as Android's concerned as well, certainly Google in particular is driving more towards, you know, just using native web apps as opposed to, for example, if you go into Android and you click on Google Earth, I believe that runs basically as a native web app as opposed to an application that you download. So, and I think as things get faster and screens get a little larger, that's going to be the trend. I think you're absolutely right. So let me ask about a little bit about licensing. What licenses do you use for the various code? Which open source licenses are you using?
Sure. So across all of our projects, we've got a bunch of different licenses. Cappuccino is licensed entirely under the LGPL. There are a lot of reasons why we think that that's a good license for Cappuccino. One of the things is that it means if you develop an app with Cappuccino, you don't need to open source it. But changes you make to Cappuccino itself do get open sourced. And also it allows us to work closely with the GNUstep project, which you, I think, may have had on this program before, which is another sort of GNU C-based implementation of OpenStep and the Cocoa ideas. And across some of our other projects, we have this project called Narwhal, which I haven't really talked about yet, which is licensed under, I believe, the BSD license. And then Atlas is licensed under proprietary license right now.
Wow. So a variety of licenses. What about the community around Cappuccino and all these other, I mean, is there a pretty good community involvement and community support?
Yeah, absolutely. We've got right now 7 people with direct commit access to the Cappuccino repository, which includes the three people who founded the company and 4 people who are outside the company completely. In fact, of those 4 people, I don't think I've met 3 of them in person, which is great for us. It's just really great to see the community take off sort of around the world. 2 of those people are outside the country. We've gotten, I think, 60 external contributors, people who've submitted 1 or more patches to the project, and that number is going up. We've seen adoption sort of really take off, I think, in the second half of this year. So we're really excited about the community that's building around the project.
And are you looking for more help? Are you looking for, you know, additional support, either in documentation or additional coding?
We're always looking for more support. I think any open source project would say the same thing.
Great.
Hey, so I'm also curious now, what skills do I need then? I think I know the answer to this question, but I just want to make sure. What skills do I need to be able to really make use of Cappuccino then?
Well, I think Cappuccino appeals to people with different sets of skills. If you come from a background in Objective-C and Cocoa or Objective-C and Cocoa Touch, I think you'll find Cappuccino pretty easy to pick up and pretty familiar. But it's also the case, I think, that people who come from a web background find Cappuccino pretty easy to pick up. Certainly the language itself, Objective-J, is easy to pick up for anyone who's programmed in any sort of object-oriented language. And, you know, the hard thing coming from a background not in Cocoa is just learning how the APIs work, which is hard when you come to any framework. But I think anyone, you know, with a solid background in programming and in classical inheritance kind of models will be very comfortable in Cappuccino.
So I have to know JavaScript. I have to learn the pieces of it to become Objective-J, but that's a lot like other object-oriented languages. That's not too hard necessarily. I also have to learn the Cocoa framework. Now, you have classes that are named similar to the Cocoa classes, but have some differences.
So the way that works is they're all named the same thing, but the prefix is different. So in Cocoa, classes are prefixed with the NS prefix, and in Cappuccino, we replaced NS with CP. And that's sort of our subtle way of indicating that it's very close, but it's not exactly the same. In general, most things will be exactly the same. Most of the methods will have the same name, and they'll work the same way. But there are instances where that's either not possible or not desirable because of the way the web works. It just requires, you know, maybe a subtle difference in the way something works. For example, being asynchronous instead of synchronous.
So I could, for example, take any tutorial on the net or maybe any of the wonderful books that are out there on Cocoa, the Next Step framework, and be able to somewhat follow along with this in Cappuccino?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's actually a pretty good way to learn. We often suggest that to people. I learned Cocoa with Aaron Hillegass's great book. And I think if you go through that book, most of the ideas will be pretty applicable to Cappuccino. There are a few things that won't be. For example, he talks about printing in that book, and you're not going to be able to print right now from Cappuccino. But in general, with just a little bit of effort, extra effort on your part to sort of translate the few things which are different, those books are a really good introduction to the way Cappuccino works.
So one of the things you probably are looking for is somebody to take one of those tutorials and adapt it precisely for Cappuccino then, so we don't have to do the translation when we're newbies.
Yeah, that'd be great. And I know that some people have expressed interest in that, and hopefully we'll see that come out.
Cool. So Cappuccino is available. It's available now. What is it? Is it production ready, or do you think we're still early in the cycle or somewhere in between?
So it's available right now. You can go to cappuccino.org, which is hard to spell probably, but if you Google Cappuccino, they'll correct your spelling for you. 2 P's, 2 C's, 1 N. But yeah, I would say that Cappuccino is production ready, and you can see Cappuccino in use in in actually a lot of production applications right now. Sofa, which is a company based in Amsterdam that does our design work, is using it in their online version of their point of sale product, which is called OnStore. And they're really happy with the way that's working. There's a bunch of other people who are using it in actually for pay products. We're obviously using it for our stuff. And the version number right now is 0.8. I think we're hoping to get to version 1.0 by the end of the year, but I think that that's more of a, it reflects more our belief in having a certain list of features that we wanted out of Coco, more than, you know, any reflection of the stability of what's there right now. And I think the things that are there right now are very stable.
I understand that Y Combinator had something to do with this project. You want to describe what the relationship was?
Sure, absolutely. So if you haven't heard of Y Combinator before, they're an early stage investment company. And so what they do is invest in, you know, small groups of maybe two or three people who often have nothing more than an idea or an idea and a simple demo. And they invest a small amount of money for a small amount of equity. So basically they invest somewhere around $15,000 to $20,000, and they take, I think, between 2% and 10% of the companies they invest in. And so for what they also do is they run this program for 3 months at their headquarters in Mountain View. So you, if you get accepted into Y Combinator, you go there for, they have two sessions. So I think it's January to April, and June to September, maybe. But it's a winter and a summer session. And you go there for 3 months, and you don't work out of their office or anything. You know, you're responsible for your own work. You have your own, you work wherever it is that you work. But they have weekly dinners, and during those weekly dinners, all the founders come together. They bring in a guest speaker, and it's really a great way for everyone to sort of stay on track with what's going on. You know, it's sort of like a mini demo. You demo your what you've been working on for the week to all the other founders, and it's a real motivational boost early on in a company's life cycle, which can be a pretty difficult time.
Do you also get some cross-pollination of ideas, being having sounding boards for what you're working on?
Absolutely. Some of the best ideas, I think, probably come from those Tuesday night dinners and showing things to other founders and having them bounce back even better ideas.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, it sounds like this is fascinating. Well, before I quit, though, you mentioned Narwhal. What's Narwhal?
Oh, sure. So Narwhal is another project that we started at 280 North together with Chris Kowal and a few other external contributors, which essentially lets us run JavaScript on the command line. So it's a runtime environment for JavaScript that runs, you know, on the command line, whether it be on Linux or Mac OS X or something like that. And we wrote this because what we needed was a way to run some of our tools in an automated fashion, right? So I mentioned you can compile Cappuccino code ahead of time. We do that by running JavaScript. We didn't want to write another interpreter. We used to use a project called Rhino, and we still use Rhino to some extent because Narwhal actually runs on top of Rhino or alternatively on top of the other engines. So Narwhal, I guess, has two goals. One is to be engine independent, so we can run our code on top of Rhino or V8 or JavaScript Core, depending on which is available and which is fastest. And it also provides sort of a common set of APIs based around the CommonJS project, which you may or may not have heard of. And the goal is to make sort of a common set of JavaScript APIs for doing development on the server.
Well, it sounds really exciting. Actually, you know, when I started looking at this project, I went, you know, I could see so many different ways. I mean, I've been looking at a lot of different things like jQuery and other toolkits to make my browser applications a lot cooler. And although this sounds like you kind of have to invest some time in it, because if you don't already know, you know, the Coco interfaces and don't already know, you know, Objective-J seems like it's fairly simple to learn. It sounds like it would be some investment, but once you get there, it looks like, you know, I'm looking at some of the demos and things you've been showing. It's really, really fascinating. About this. I hope a lot more people take a look at this as an opportunity.
Yeah, I think there definitely is a little bit of a startup time, and there's going to be overhead for doing really simple things. Like I said, we don't want people to use Cappuccino for things which could be written without Cappuccino in a day. Cappuccino is really designed for these sort of larger scale applications, which, you know, you're going to have tens or hundreds of thousands of lines of code running in a browser.
And also the future direction for this, if you make it available for me that I can use the same exact set of tools and write desktop apps that are cross-platform, that sounds even more exciting as well.
Yeah, I think native host will be an interesting project going forward, especially as Cappuccino starts to have more time to spend on mobile. We'll see how native host can play into there, maybe working with or similar to doing the same kind of things PhoneGap is doing. So you can write native iPhone apps that'll ship on the App Store, but that are still written with web technologies.
Wow, that would be really cool. Now, what's the funding model for this? What's your day job? How are you paying the bills?
So Cappuccino was the sort of main effort of our company, which was called 280 North. Mm-hmm. And we, as 280 North, were selling licenses to Atlas. But 280 North was actually recently acquired by Motorola. And so now our day job is working at Motorola. And we'll be working on some new things there. And while we may have a little bit less time to spend on Cappuccino ourselves, we're still actively involved in the project. And we're putting a lot of extra emphasis on growing the community to make sure that as our time on Cappuccino maybe lessens a little bit, the project as a whole will be picking up even faster.
So you guys are going to serve sort of as executive directors, and actually the other people are picking up the ball now and making it better, faster, and stronger then?
A little bit like that, yeah. But I'm pretty sure we'll still write code.
Oh, really? Don't want to get out of that role. Okay, cool. Well, is there anything I left out? I think we got a pretty good handle on what Cappuccino is all about. Anything that I stumbled over and should be talked about here?
No, I think that that's great. And just, again, to mention the website, cappuccino.org, if you want to check mm-hmm. it out. Yeah, that's it.
Very good. Well, Ross, I really appreciate you stopping by today to talk about your project. And I have a feeling you'll have at least one more customer by the end of the week, if I can convince Neil that this is something to take a look at. Very cool. Very cool. Thanks, Ross. Thanks for stopping by.
Great. Thanks.
So that was Ross Boucher. He works for 280 North, I believe, still. Well, independent, subsidiary of Motorola there, and talking to us about Cappuccino. What do you think, Aaron?
Yeah, I think it was really, really interesting, especially like I mentioned before about, you know, how you start thinking about new ways and that you want to develop your web applications, kind of a shortcut process, if you will. You know, and there's been a lot of these around, and I think that, you know, this is another one that's really, really interesting. And like I said, especially when you consider, you know, going from either developing a web app that will run via the web on your phone or tablet device. You know, having the ability to develop for both, or at least reuse part of what you're developing for both a web app and, you know, a phone application, I think is really, really interesting.
And I especially like the idea that, you know, if you're already familiar with JavaScript and you don't want to go the other direction and learning all the nuances of C, which can be quite daunting unless you've sort of grown up in that world, that this would also then give you a way to make, you know, rich web apps and rich desktop apps that without having to learn all the Objective-C stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for someone like me, as you guys were saying, it's going to, you know, require a little bit of catching up to do since I know a little bit about object-oriented languages, but, you know, it's going to require a little bit more investment. But it seems like over the long run, if that's what you want to do, seems like a pretty good project to get involved with.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Well, speaking of good projects to get involved with, this is about time I make that wonderful transition where I'm talking about upcoming shows. And where's my webpage? There it is. There it is. And I push the button here. Okay, so coming up next week, we have John Newton and Louis Sala, is probably something like that, talking to us about Alfresco, which is another content management system. We had Clone on last week, but we got another content management system with a slightly different slant coming up next week. Simon Phipps is joining us again for that one, which will be great. I also have, the list is getting really short. Time for me to start scheduling more guests. We also have Derek Schreiber with the 2600 Hertz project talking about telephony from end to end. And Aaron, you're back for that one again.
Yep.
Very cool. Very cool. And there will be other future ones there. I'm going on a cruise for a couple weeks immediately following that. I'll be in Europe on a really nice cruise. I'm actually visiting the Large Hadron Collider about this time 2 weeks from now, which will be really fun. So you won't see me on those weeks, but I'm going to try to get good old friend John O'Bacon to come back and talk about Severed Fifth and his open source music project. I'm also going to get Patrick Michaud to come in to talk about Racuda, which is the current best implementation of Perl 6. And they'll talk about the status of Pearl 6 and all that sort of stuff. But those are going to be tape off hours. They're probably going to be slotted in as audio-only shows for the 2 weeks in the gap there. They have a number of people on the short list. If you go to twitch.tv/floss, you can see the short list there. We're trying to get all these things worked in. I should be probably have those mostly scheduled by the time we're down there. And then if you have a suggestion, just have the project leader email me, merlin@stonehenge.com. A lot of people have been doing that, and I've been trying to get them all in as quickly as I can. You can follow me on Twitter, in fact, at twitter.com/Merlin, M-E-R-L-Y-N. If you're in the Los Angeles area, I'm currently here frequently because my primary clients are down here. And I go to a lot of the local meetings. Like I'll be actually hosting the Pearl Users Group next week if you happen to be in the L.A. area. And one other announcement that I have about me, I'm just loving talking about me, but there we go, is I am doing narration from time to time for a science fiction podcast called Starship Sofa, and apparently one of the pieces I read is going out today on their podcast, starshipsofa.com. I read a 20-minute piece called McIlvain, which is part of their segment they're calling Then and Now, where there's like an old author and a new author being compared side by side with some voting, which should be really fun. So checking on that, that would be a good thing for you to check on if you like science fiction stories. I love that I'm a narrator for that. Aaron, where are you, and what do you want to spam here?
Yeah, so you can always follow actually it's not I've been updating forever, but you can go to the website thesourceshow.org, and I promise I will be actually updating and releasing some new podcasts, video podcasts soon there. One of the things that I do have to plug is if you're in the Bay Area, I had the chance to go to a meetup. It's called Make SF. And if you go to that, you will be able to see they meet up on a regular basis in the Bay Area, and they do all kinds of cool projects. The last meeting I went to, they were showing off a MakerBot, one of these CNC machines that you can print 3D objects out. And then we also built a TV Be Gone, which you may be familiar. It's a little device. I think you can see it here. And I promise I won't actually turn it on in the studio, but we built a TV Be Gone, like in an hour, and everyone kind of sat down with in front of their soldering irons and put it together, and it was really cool. So I would just encourage anybody. They do a great job. They have meetings both in Oakland and San Francisco, so go to Meetup and find them there and participate. It's a lot of fun to get together and talk about all kinds of cool things that you can make and do. So I encourage people to check it out.
Very cool, Aaron. Thank you. And also thank you for stepping in at the very last second. I know that Aaron Siegel got called away to an international conference at the very last minute. So I immediately go, help, I need another co-host for the show. So really appreciate you coming in at the last second for the show.
Hey, no problem. If you can't get one Aaron, you might as well get the other, right?
That's right. Got to have the name duplication. That's the only way to make it work. Yep. Well, good. I think without further ado, without wasting any of our audience's time, I'm just going to say what I always say. We'll see you next time on Floss Weekly. We'll